heads off and stuff.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to call to order the August 9th, 2018 hearing of the Clark County Land Use Hearings Examiner. My name is Daniel Cairns, and I'll be presiding over the hearing tonight. We have two items on the agenda. Let me begin with a brief introduction to me and an explanation as to how the process is going to run this evening. First of all, I and one other person, we serve by appointment from the Board of County Councilors to review land use applications in unincorporated Clark County. It's our job to review the record, review the application, read all the correspondence, public comments, and then to convene a public hearing such as this on each item, take public testimony, and ultimately to decide whether these applications meet or don't meet the applicable land use approval criteria. These are the standards that are in the county's Unified Development Code as it existed on the day these applications were submitted. And it's not our job to be more stringent nor more lenient than these criteria allow, but rather to interpret them fairly and to decide whether there is sufficient evidence in the record to show that these standards are met or can be met. And basically, if the evidence is there, then we're obligated to approve these applications. So it's these approval criteria that govern each of these applications as we go forward. I'm also required to provide an impartial evaluation of each of these applications, and I believe that I am with regard to both of the items on tonight's agenda. I haven't had and don't have any business, familial, or any other relationship with any of the parties associated with either of these applications. What I know about each of them is based on what I've read from the record. I've had my record for approximately 2 weeks now. And during the public testimony portion of the hearing, feel free to question me about any potential conflicts or ex parte contacts or biases that I might have. But you'll have that opportunity during the public testimony portion. With regard to each of the items on the agenda tonight, here's the basic schedule of events. We'll begin with a staff report, and that's a verbal rendition of the written staff report that was issued prior to tonight's hearing. I believe the copies are still available in the back table there. After the staff report, then the applicant makes their primary presentation. You applicants out there, you can assume that I've read the application. I'm familiar with the proposal, but there are three issues in particular I'd like you to focus on. First of all, I need to know if there have been any changes. I need to know what the current formulation is in the record. And so bring me up to current on any changes that have occurred since the record was submitted. Secondly, I need to have your specific response, corrections, challenges to staff's proposed findings and staff's proposed conditions of approval. And those are set forth in the staff reports that were issued prior to tonight's hearing. So from the applicant, I need to have kind of specific response to each of those. And if you concur with staff's proposed findings and conditions, feel free to say that. And the third thing that I would like from the applicant is during the public testimony that would follow, keep track of the issues and questions that people raise. A lot of times public testimony comes in the form of questions about the impacts this development is going to have on them, how it's going to function, how the traffic system will be impacted, how the storm system is going to work, those sorts of things. And for those kinds of questions, those kinds of comments, the applicant is usually in the best position to answer those. So keep note of public testimony, and for the appropriate issues, be ready to respond to them during your final rebuttal. So after the applicant's presentation, then anyone else in favor of the proposal can testify. And then anyone who is neutral or has questions, they can testify. And finally, anyone opposed to the proposal testifies. If there's opponent testimony, the applicant gets final rebuttal after that. The applicant always gets the last word in all of these matters because they have the burden of proof, the burden of proving that they've met the approval criteria that are set out in the code. After everyone has had a chance to say pretty much everything they want to that's relevant to the matter, I'll turn back to staff to see if there are any parting comments or advice that staff has to offer. And it's my typical habit to close the record at the conclusion of the public testimony. If anyone needs additional time to formulate testimony or to respond to new evidence that's come in, you can ask for a continuance or that the record be kept open. If you want either of those things, you need to make those requests during the public testimony portion of the hearing. And remember, you need to raise before me, before the close of the record, any issue that you'd want to preserve for a subsequent appeal. And you need to present to me any evidence that you would like me to consider or that you want to rely upon for a subsequent appeal. As I mentioned, I would at the end, I will close the record, and that will end your ability to raise new issues or to present new evidence. My decisions, I usually don't declare a winner or a loser from at the end of the hearing, but rather I take the matter under consideration, including all the evidence and testimony that comes in, and I issue a written decision approximately 2 weeks after the close of the record. My decisions are final at the county level and can be appealed to Superior Court through the Land Use Petition Act. But to appeal one of my decisions, you have to participate, either orally or in writing, before the close of the public record. And remember, you need to raise, before that record closes, any issue that you'd want to preserve for an appeal, and you need to submit any evidence you'd want to rely upon in that appeal. Here are some basic do's and don'ts for presenting testimony this evening. First of all, anyone who wants to participate and testify, only do so in that order that I just recited so that I can keep the straight who's on what side of things. When it's your category of time to testify, come up to this table in front of us. Part of the record I'm compiling is an audio recording of the testimony. Sometimes that's the only way to preserve issues that people raise. So only testify up here, speak into the microphone, begin with your name and mailing address. We're required to glean addresses from people because we're obligated to send our decisions to everybody who participates. And that's why we need that information. I might ask you also to spell your name so I get that straight. Limit your testimony to issues that are relevant. Those are outlined in the staff report. Let me know if you represent somebody else so I have a notion as to who is really involved. If you have any evidence or documents you want me to consider, you can log those in with the administrative assistant. They will become part of the permanent record. Be prepared to leave any such documents here tonight because if there's a subsequent appeal, those will be transferred to Superior Court with the entire record. Remember to limit your testimony to the approval criteria, and remember to, if you want a continuance or to keep the record open, to make that request. And finally, once again, to raise any issue you'd want to preserve for an appeal and present any evidence. That's it by way of procedural rundown. If you have questions going forward, feel free to ask those. I'll take the items in order tonight, starting with the cell tower. POR Big Ditch, CUP number 2017-9, 120-foot cell tower on light industrial zone land. I will take a staff report at this time, please.
Good evening. My name is Vicki Kircher. I'm the project planner for the first case this evening. To my left is David Bottomini. He's representing Development Engineering. For each of the cases under consideration this evening, staff will first provide an overview of the applicant's proposal. We will then summarize the staff report and identify any major issues raised therein. In its entirety, the report is a detailed analysis of how the proposal meets applicable county design and approval criteria. Based on this evaluation, staff will conclude our presentation by making a recommendation to the hearings examiner. As the examiner has mentioned, the first application before him this evening is a request to construct a 120-foot wireless communication monopole and ground support equipment within a leased area on approximately 0.4 acres in a light industrial zone. And at this time, I'll present a brief summary of the applicant's request. On the vicinity map, the general location of the subject property is identified with a black dot. We can see the property is located between SR 503 on the west, northeast 137th on the east, it's north of 4th Plain Boulevard, and south of Padden Parkway. More specifically, the property is located just south of Kerr Road and it's on the west side of Northeast 134th Avenue. The zoning map provides a little closer look at the surrounding area. The subject property is identified in red. As you will note, the site and the immediately surrounding properties are all zoned light industrial. This R12 zone located to the northwest is a multifamily designation. Its close proximity to the zoning district, from the zoning district to the cell tower, is the reason that this project is being reviewed as a type 3 public hearing, because it's within 500 feet of a residentially zoned piece of property. This slide shows the overall site. Northeast 134th is here on the west. Its property will be served by a driveway off of extending west eastward off of 134th back to a lease area in the northeast corner of the property. This provides a little bit closer look at the lease area. The plan calls for the cell tower, ground equipment, generator, and some utility meters and whatnot within a 6-foot enclosed compound, which is then surrounded by landscaping on a 5-foot landscape buffer. The applicant is also required and proposing to place a sound wall to limit the impacts of noise on adjacent properties. And at this point, I will show photographs of the site. This is an aerial photograph with the subject property outlined in red. The lot is currently vacant. It's essentially flat, and as you can see, there are trees scattered throughout the site, and the lease area is up here in this area right here. This map is included to assist in gaining a perspective of where the photos were taken. As you can see, we start out at the southwest corner of the property, move in a clockwise direction, and end up back at the west, looking west from the lease area itself.
One question before you go beyond the aerial photograph. What's the use off to the east?
This particular building here?
Not the building.
Or this?
Wavy track thing.
It was an illegal go-kart track.
Okay.
That has since been, the building and the go-kart track has been discontinued.
Okay.
So it's, yeah. So anyway, this first photo is at the approximate location of the driveway onto the site that will provide access to the cell tower. We're looking south on Northeast 134th Avenue. You can see in the background here, Fourth Plain Boulevard. Here we've moved across Northeast 134th and are looking in a northeasterly direction. You can, in the distance here, see Northeast Kerr Road. The subject property is in this location on the right-hand side. The fence that you see here is the northern boundary of the site. The driveway leading access into the property is located in approximately this area here, right the front part of that car. For this slide, we are now standing at the northwest corner. Here's the fence that I had mentioned previously. We're looking towards the lease area. This power pole is on an adjacent property to the north and is located northeast of the lease area. The lease area is generally right in this direction behind those trees. It was kind of difficult to get photos of the site because it's trees and whatnot. But we've moved now, and we're at the cell looking back where we just to the west where we just took the other photo, beyond those trees that we saw in the photo that we just viewed. And that will conclude photographs of the site. The staff report was issued on July 25th of this year. It included a SEPA determination of non-significance. That determination is now final in that there was no appeal filed. And as I previously mentioned, the staff report is a detailed analysis of how the proposed cell tower meets county development standards and criteria. And based on that evaluation, staff identified two issues. First, the applicant is required to hold a neighborhood meeting prior to submitting the application for a new support tower. In addition to administrative guidelines, the code provides specific requirements for providing notice of this meeting. One of those is that the mailing list used for sending out the notice must be less than 30 days old. Based on documentation that was submitted as part of the application materials, the mailing list was 70 days old. The second issue is that the applicant must demonstrate that rather than build a new tower, co-location on nearby towers or other support structures in the vicinity is not feasible. In this case, there is a tower located on Northeast 117th. The applicant provided maps and justification for not co-locating on this tower, but the information was not stamped by a radio frequency engineer. There are also BPA transmission lines and, as a result, structures in that area at other towers. The applicant did not provide specific information regarding those, why they couldn't locate on those structures as part of the application material. And as a result, staff was not able to conclude that they met all the requirements for locating a new tower. However, late this afternoon, the applicant submitted materials in a response to addressing both of those issues. Those identified documents are identified as Exhibit 25 and I believe that the hearings examiner was given those just prior to the hearing.
I was.
Okay. Staff has not had an opportunity to review those materials, so our initial recommendation that was in the staff report was for denial. However, if the hearings examiner believes that the information submitted by the applicant this afternoon sufficiently addresses those issues and determines the application should be approved, then we recommend the conditions that we identified in the July 25th staff report be imposed. And with that, I will conclude our presentation. Mr. Bottomini and I will be available to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. I too have not had a chance to review Exhibit 25. I'm looking at Exhibit 24, though. It's kind of interesting. It's the site plan for this entire property, of which this is just a 45 by 50 foot lease lot. The site plan says there was a pre-app on it in August of 2015. When was the site plan approved?
The site plan was approved in 2015.
Okay.
And the number on that was PSR 2015-23 or 00023. That they actually have gone through and received a final site plan approval and final engineering approval for that particular site plan and for industrial buildings on that site. But as you noted, and I confirmed during the review process that the proposed cell tower in the lease area wouldn't have any impact on that.
Right. I think it's interesting, though, the site plan anticipates a cell tower in this location.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Any public comments or phone calls or inquiries on this? The reason I ask is because the new evidence in Exhibit 25 that came in, it appears to address the issues that were outstanding in the staff report. But I'm a little reluctant to close the record without at least leaving a few days for public comment on these new pieces of evidence.
There are no comments, no phone calls during the course of this review.
Okay. Okay. You'll have a chance to testify at the appropriate moment. Okay.
All I can say is there were none directed to me. So.
Okay. Mr. Bonamini, unfortunately, this doesn't seem to have a lot of engineering issues other than RF. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I'll take the applicant's presentation.
And are these? Oh, yes, it is on. Good evening. My name is Sarah Springer. I'm with Bush Law Firm here representing Verizon Wireless. And I'm also here with my colleagues that can introduce themselves as well.
Yes. My name is Sophia Meckers. I'm with BlackRock Consulting. I'm Verizon's consultant on the project.
My name is Rahim Diwani. I work for Verizon Wireless under the RF design team.
You're the RF engineer?
Not by the code of Washington, not okay. By definition.
Okay, that's right. You played an important role here, but we've been waiting for the Hatfield and Dawson stamp on this thing. But you did the primary work on
that. That is correct.
Okay, very good. Who would like to start?
I'll begin. To your direction of items for us to address on the record for any changes in the record, staff indicated that there's the new Exhibit 25, which should include the letter submitted this afternoon with four attachments to that letter for additional information for your consideration. Those attachments being the updated RF justification letter from Mr. Diwani, the additional propagation, which in that letter contains additional information regarding the BPA towers, correct? The second attachment would be additional propagation maps regarding the SBA tower, which I believe is at the address, the tower at the address. I apologize, in our
correct.
Common
yep.
vernacular. We so that should address the other site that was outstanding for RF justification. And there's a July 25th letter from Hatfield and Dawson that includes their review of the revised justification letter as well as the SBA additional SBA propagation maps and their concurrency with Mr. Diwani's analysis within that RF letter, justification letter. And then a final email received from BPA for additional disqualification of two of the BPA towers due to their location in wetlands from BPA. So just additional information there.
Okay, good. Does the Hatfield-Dawson letter address the BPA towers?
Yes. And as far as specific responses to staff's proposed findings and conditions, as staff addressed, the two concerns that staff had are addressed in the August 9th letter presented for your review. In short, we do believe that, we do agree that there was the mailing for the neighborhood meeting did not meet the 30-day issuance required by code, but we do believe that in effect the Verizon achieved substantial compliance with the requirements of the code in that mailers were actually mailed to each and every address. So each and every address did receive a notification card. It so happened that two of those addresses were labeled to the previous property owner. But okay. Those addresses still received the notification card. And we've noted that all other notification requirements for the neighborhood meeting were met, and all notification requirements for this hearing and the notice for this hearing were properly met.
Okay. So you've addressed the legal issues here, and it's purely a matter of the shelf life of the mailing list, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And briefly, we also addressed the screening and landscaping requirements of staff and just confirming that we have no problem with staff's recommendation and, in fact, have already updated the landscape plan. So that is ready for final approval to meet those conditions pursuant to staff's recommendation. And for the remainder of staff's findings and recommended conditions, we concur and have no problems with that and thank staff for their diligent review of the application.
So question, you say in your letter here that you've updated the landscape plans and have you submitted those or are you just going to?
No, we were directed that that might cause undue confusion at this stage, okay. And that'd be proper to submit those at final, okay. The final plan submittal.
All right, I was going to
say.
We're
just confirming that.
The condition is quite clear, so
yes.
The fact that you've basically fulfilled the condition prior to hearing, that's fine, but just that would confuse things if you submit something new like that, it tends to blow up the process.
Yes, okay. Staff expertly directed us to, yes.
Okay, the package makes sense. What else?
The That's as far as our specific responses. And so if there's any additional questions, we realize that you haven't had a substantial or amount of time to review the additional RF materials, but to the extent that you might have any questions, we're happy to answer any of those.
One question is about the SBA tower. How many cell sites are on it right now? How many antenna arrays? Because it was built as a spec tower.
It may have been. I'm not. That tower actually fell outside of the search area and our service area, so I'm not sure how many co-locators they have on that tower.
Okay.
And I apologize. I do not know that information offhand, but I can quickly do a search.
Okay. If you could do that, it's not really germane to the approval criteria, but I'm always interested when a spec tower falls somewhere in the range of looking, just to find out how many arrays are on them. Sure. So
we can quickly try to review and in our rebuttal at the end provide.
Okay, that would be helpful. Yep. But again, it's not really directly applicable to the approval criteria. Okay, and you heard my preliminary notion that I'm inclined to leave the record open for a short period of time, so we can deal with that scheduling issue at the conclusion of public testimony.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think that's it, unless you have something more to add. Okay.
Wait to
see what public testimony comes in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify in favor of this proposal? Anyone with neutral testimony or questions? Anyone opposed? Come on down. Who'd like to start?
I'll be glad to. We live across the street from the proposed site.
Why don't you begin with your name, and when you say the street, you mean 134th?
Across the street, yes, 134th.
Give me your mailing.
Which we are, just a point of order, we're on the west side. Earlier in the testimony.
I get my east and west mixed up sometimes.
My name is Doug Underwood, and I'm at 6900 Northeast 134th Avenue.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so I have a lot of questions and things I want to bring up. One is I feel like there's an intentional obfuscation of process. Everything from when the initial sign was put up, it was tapped in the ground and fell over 5 minutes after it was put up, just literally just blew over because it wasn't even in the ground. The meetings weren't posted in a timely manner. When we went to an original neighborhood meeting, they could give us no information on the specs of the tower, just like what you were asking a minute ago, you know, as far as how many of the receivers or whatever broadcasters are on there. And, of course, in the plan, it shows a certain number, but it also shows a certain number of future openings that they can add considerably more to at an opposite angle, which changes polarization, which is another issue. But
you were at the neighborhood meeting for this thing?
My family was. I wasn't that day. But
okay.
They were able to give no specific information about anything, the wattage of the radio lengths, any technical information whatsoever. And, submitting documents last minute like these changes.
Have you, by the way, seen the packet that came in tonight?
No, I have not.
It's not tiny. Four documents. Five documents.
Well, again, I don't expect enormous changes, but I feel like there's a certain obviation of normal, procedural things going on here that's intentional. It seems intentional, feels intentional to me, to sort of keep the public in the dark about this. Additionally, I did make an attempt to talk to Mrs. Kirshner. Ms. Kirshner, I called first, couldn't get an answer, came into the office physically. You weren't there that day, so I ended up talking to two of your equivalent peers who had something to do with the case, maybe early on, at least one of them. The lady, yeah. And
as far as I know, I'm the only female that has been involved in this application. I did the original, there was a pre-application conference on this. some time ago. Now, one of a male colleague did the second pre-app, but
whom I spoke to,
okay,
as well as a woman, and I had just missed the deadline for filing any additional information and queries to you. So I did attempt to do that. I did not receive the packet in the mail. I talked to a neighbor who got it. That's how I found out about it. I don't know what caused that, but I didn't get that. So that's just a sort of procedural concern thing. In addition to that, I'm obviously concerned with lots of new information coming out on health concerns, whether that can be listened to or not. There are lots of new studies. I'm wondering why it has to be in that location, since, for example, at Northeast 137th, just a couple blocks away, and Fourth Pine, there's a large 5.5 or 5.75 vacant field for sale. The other
what it's zoned?
Pardon me?
Do you know what the field is zoned?
I do not, but I'm sure it's right against Fourth Plains, so it should be in the LI corridor, the commercial corridor. Additionally, behind us in the other direction, west, just beyond northeast, at the corner of Northeast 131st and Fourth Plain, there's also a large vacant field that's divided with two owners that's also, for sale, has been for sale off and on, and are much bigger spaces to put something like this in. I'm wondering why it needs to be a 120-foot tall tower when no other tower in the area is that height. That seems peculiar to me.
In Dakota, it's a maximum they can get.
Yeah.
Without basically brain surgery.
And yet no others are that big in the entire Orchard Sifton area. And it just seems like there are many other more appropriate places that it could go. The go-kart track is recently defunct, although people are still moving in and out of there using the building for things. Something's still going on. There is
no more go-karts.
No, thank goodness. It was never legal to begin with. In addition, the pictures that you took down the driveway where there's a fence that you kept mentioning,
mm-hmm,
there is a house right on the other side of that fence. We're across the street from it. There's another house to our south that is also occupied. There's a business next door where people, legally or not, live in the business. There are, along that fence, there is a dump truck company where people seem to be living in the buildings. There's another one just across Kerr Road. There are all sorts of houses, duplexes, mm-hmm, trailers. So there are a lot of people, there's still a lot of residents in the area that were there, grandfathered in before it became light industrial. Mm-hmm. And so, that's our home. We're concerned about all the
Is your property light industrial?
It is zone light industrial now, yes. Yeah, that whole corridor. But there's still many houses and duplexes and things there, mm-hmm, in a very close proximity to this. We're talking, less than 100 yards, I think. So, the radiation, the RF radiation, the microwave would be coming directly at us. And so those are my main concerns. One more main concern is that according to all the research I've done, property values in the vicinity of one of these go down on average 30%, and I haven't seen that addressed at all in terms of, is there going to be a compensation? Does that constitute a taking? That's a big concern to me. We don't plan to sell our house anytime soon. We don't plan to at all. So, and none of the other neighbors do either, as far as I know.
Those are a lot of issues. Let's see.
The health concerns are very substantial to me. Recently in California, these were being put in smaller form on the tops of schools and firehouses, and the firemen were getting so sick, having malaise and dizziness and headaches, that they couldn't perform their duties. They fought this. They got them removed from all the firehouses in California, and when they did, everyone got better. Even though it's well below the government standard for the allowable emissions, increasingly new evidence is coming in, both in the U.S. and Germany and other places, showing that it's very harmful even at these low RF levels and microwave levels, in part because of the pulsing nature, in part because of the polarization of them, lots of different things. So it's really sort of an untested thing that we don't know enough about, yet.
You know, I've never had a public hearing on a cell tower where that issue wasn't raised.
Right.
It is a big concern for neighbors, residential neighbors in particular. But I got to tell you, Congress has totally taken it off the table. It's not an issue.
I know. Nevertheless, still a concern for us.
Right.
I am aware of that.
So write your congressman.
Yeah.
So, okay, go ahead.
Again. So those are my big issues. I know traffic will increase. I didn't have a problem with the building that was put in, that's, you know, planned.
Traffic's going to increase because of the other light industrial buildings that are going to go in there. Cell towers are not trip generators.
Yeah, just when they're doing the construction, I'm sure. As far as the building, you know, we weren't terribly opposed to the building. We know it's light industrial. We know things like that are going to go in. But it was also suspicious to us, again, this sort of obfuscation that, you know, from the very beginning they really intended a cell tower, but they kind of avoided it until the last minute and then sort of snuck it in after the building was permitted. And I understand that they're two separate permits.
Okay, so you were following the site plan then?
Absolutely.
Okay. I've never actually seen it happen that way where, you know, raw land, undeveloped land goes through site plan and anticipates a cell tower. I got to tell you, and it's probably no surprise to you, that it's a very common combination, but to actually go through site plan and spec it out there like they did in this case is kind of unusual.
They've actually gone through several permutations of what was proposed there, which I know happens. Even before the building was permitted, you know, they had different ideas of use, so it kept changing. It was kind of hard to keep up with it because it was, you know, kept changing, shifting a little.
Yeah, and nobody really, and they usually don't have tenants beforehand, so it's, you know, it's all spec development.
Right. So, you know, to conclude, my biggest question is, why there? You know, with all these other available places, why there?
Yeah.
It seems like the worst place. We have a lot of new housing even just within a direct line of it to the north. There's sort of a house, and there are two houses and a little defunct tow truck company, and then more houses and a whole bunch of new houses and a Kaiser building to the east and north. And, of course, I would imagine that would affect their equipment, too, with the RF and microwave emissions, you know, with their medical equipment.
Not supposed to. It's not supposed to.
But it's only a short distance, you know.
Well, the federal government regulates that, and RF interference is another thing where federal law preempts local regulation. But, you know, I've been assured by RF engineers over and over and over again that, you know, this will stay within the power limits of our license, and we've designed it to not have any RF interference, so. That's what they say. And
well, I have a little story about that. When they put in a radio station locally that wasn't supposed to, and every time we'd pick up our phone, we couldn't hear a dial tone. We heard the radio station broadcast. So despite best efforts, it doesn't always work out.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that too. Okay. That's a pretty extensive list. What I recommend, that if you haven't already done so, the application should be fully available. It's a very large application. It's a big binder of technical materials. Should be available to you to review, but more importantly for tonight's proceeding, this packet of information that came in today, Exhibit 25, you should take a look at. As I mentioned, I'm inclined to keep the record open to allow you and anyone else to, you know, submit comments based on that new information. So keep that in mind. We'll deal with the scheduling issue before we're done tonight, though.
All right. Yeah, I have set up a public records request, so I assume I can access those through that.
Sure, you should be able to, without too much trouble, get copies of this stuff.
Fantastic.
I can actually give you copies of what was submitted tonight after the hearing if we go downstairs together.
Thank you.
It'll take a little bit to print it, but I can do that.
All right. Yeah. No problem. Thank you very much.
Okay. Who else? Go ahead.
My name is Barbara Underwood. I live across the street at 6900 Northeast 134th Avenue. And
I assume you're related.
Yes, I'm his wife.
Okay.
Second to everything he said, but what I want to leave tonight is with this idea, with all the legal terminology put aside and the referring of this to be a site plan, first and foremost, this is our neighborhood. And even though light industrial has been thrown around throughout this evening's proceedings, it is surrounded by neighborhood homes and families. And it's my question is also the same. Why here? There's a lot of other places it can go where families, pets, children are not so close in proximity to this plan. This is not a upper middle class neighborhood. It's not a middle class neighborhood. It is a lower socioeconomic neighborhood. And so I think that's one of the reasons why there's not a big turnout tonight. A lot of people maybe are not aware or have the time to look into this, like my husband has. But I just feel like it's kind of taking advantage of this, of the area. And it's a cheaper spot to put something when it could be done somewhere else, perhaps safer. I guess that's all I wanted to say.
Yep, that's very clear. Thank you. You're next.
Well, my name is Michael Alcantar, and I.
Could you spell that? That's a little tricky.
Alpha Lima Charlie Alpha November Tango Alpha Romeo. And I reside at 7012 Northeast 133rd Avenue.
Okay. On the other side?
Roughly two blocks.
Okay.
Two and a half.
North and west.
Northwest.
Okay, go ahead.
And, I mean, I definitely agree with this, what Mr. Underwood had brought up. Though, like, we can obviously disagree as far as, you know, what the federal government's determined. And, yes, we can go back and forth on that. I come at it from a, I guess, medical concerns is one, but the other one being is, like, the RF interference. I'm an amateur radio operator, so there's no question that the noise level and interference is going to be relevant as far as that goes. I don't know where that stands on, you know, the lines of the FCC. Obviously, you know, they're gonna go with what the federal government has deemed acceptable. But just because it's deemed acceptable doesn't mean that the interference isn't going to be there. You know, it's just like, you know, our noise, allowable noise decibel on, like, our automobiles. Just because it's quiet, or it's quieter than what it could be, doesn't always mean that it doesn't, it may not, that doesn't mean that it's not prone to being a nuisance or an interference.
You know, it's probably not nothing.
Most definitely, sir. So I guess that's one of my concerns. Mr. Underwood brought up the medical portion, which I thought was very elaborately set out. Mrs. Underwood, I agree with what she had to say with the whole demographics of where it's located. And yes, I just wanted to voice thoroughly that my opinion on it is in agreement with, you know, it's a residential neighborhood. Even though it's zoned light industrial, there's a lot of residential, houses in the close proximity versus, you know, where, say, like across the street, to the southwest where they built a new fence company and there was a softball park, you know, they could have easily placed, you know, a cell tower. What is that? Not even a 16th of a mile, maybe more like five blocks at max. You know, so there's definitely available, you know, locations that I feel would have been better suited.
Is there any... I mean, you're aware in the code, actually the county has anticipated this and has a list of priority zones to put these things in. And light industrial is the second. The first choice is heavy industrial. And are any of these other sites zoned heavy industrial?
I am not quite sure, sir. If there would be, I don't know as far as a timeline, if there was any way that there would be any time given that I could possibly research that, I would be more than willing to.
Well, presumably, the staff has looked into it and the applicant has looked into it, but that's, you know, the code views all light industrial zone land the same as the zoning matter, and that heavy industrial is a higher priority, so it's tough. It is sort of a tough burden if there is heavy industrial within the search ring.
May I just clarify that when I did the staff report, there were no heavy industrial lands within 2 miles of the site. So yeah. We have very little heavy industrial actually in the county.
It's kind of a scarce resource for jurisdictions because, you know, they're not creating any new heavy industrial land.
Okay.
But it's...
Now, do they zone, is it just all light industrial, or do they have classifications of light industrial?
Just light industrial, generally.
But does that reflect the fact that heavy industrial has a higher burden of safety or sound barrier, you know, distances and things like that, and that's why they don't want so much heavy industrial everywhere, and they go to light industrial instead?
Well, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I
mean, so...
You know, when the county adopted its wireless communication ordinance, you know, this seems to reflect the assumption at the time by the county commissioners that, you know, put these are quasi-industrial things. They have industrial sort of look, impact, that sort of thing. So that's, I would assume, why the county structured the zone priorities the way it did.
I would agree with that priority. I'd rather see it in a heavy industrial.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Light industrial is number two.
Yeah.
So.
Is there, just out of curiosity, and it slightly pertains but doesn't directly, is there a reason why we haven't followed suit with, like, a lot of the other places in the country that, like, at least attempt to camouflage these things even when we have them?
I think there is oftentimes, and cell companies always are trying. They would like to avoid controversy, and so I see them offer to cloak them in different ways. You know, you've driven through California, you see them look like saguaro cactuses, like Joshua trees. Nowadays, you see them look, especially if churches are nearby, giant crosses or towers of various sorts. I'm not really sure what's in the area here.
So would that be something, you know, as far as future-wise, going to a county meeting or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the county councilors, I'm sure, would consider that. You know, they look at the context, though. So in the middle of an industrial area, if there are no trees, it would look weird to have a giant tree there that looks suspiciously like a cell tower. If there are a lot of trees, it blends in pretty well if it's cloaked like a tree. And I've seen that happen in a lot of the rural districts. This, I'm not really sure what's available for that sort of thing. But it's definitely something that's not exactly required by the code.
Okay.
Anything else? You've got quite a list of issues you've raised.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify in opposition to this proposal? Time for... Springer, rebuttal.
Thank you. Just very briefly, Your Honor, already covered the federal law regarding metal concerns and issues in relation to the siting of wireless facilities, good, bad, or indifferent. Indeed, that is the law. I know that Ms. Makers can speak to the noticing more specifically of this matter. I appreciate the comments that are provided tonight, and absolutely, we always want to have the community feel like they have an ample opportunity to comment. And as the record reflects, this matter has been properly noticed. Not only with the neighborhood committee, which there were actually in effect two, this site was had a first go round and then had a second restart, if you will, mm-hmm. and as well as the opportunity to present here this evening. There indeed has been no attempt to obfuscate the process, and to whatever extent we can provide any additional transparency this evening to help in your decision making, we'd be happy to do so.
I would just like to clarify, so when this project commenced, there was a pre-application conference. I didn't bring that documentation with me. I didn't know that would...
Well, the pre-app conference notes are in the record, I believe.
Yes, they are.
The first pre-app that I had that expired?
Probably not, no.
That's the one I'm referring to. So there was a pre-application conference. I held a neighborhood meeting, and that is the meeting that the neighbors attended that they were speaking to. Then the project was put on hold. That pre-application conference expired, so that's when I had the second pre-application conference and the second neighborhood meeting, and no one attended that meeting.
How was the attendance on the first one?
I believe the neighbors that just testified were there, and one other, perhaps two other people.
Okay, so a handful of people. About when was that first meeting?
I'm sorry?
About when was that first meeting?
I'm trying to remember. It may have been 2014.
Okay, several years ago. Seem right to you?
I was thinking 2015, but...
It could have been 2015.
Was it about the, must have been about the time of the site plan?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Okay.
And then as to the selection of this location, as you know, the county employs a siting hierarchy. So when we receive the search ring from engineering, we'll first look for available structures that could work for co-location. If we're able to disqualify those, then we have to look to the preferential zoning. As Vicky, Ms. Kirshner mentioned, there was no heavy industrial.
Yeah.
And we look to the light industrial parcels. This was an interested property owner. It's my understanding from my colleague who did the initial due diligence and research on this that no other light industrial parcels were interested, so we moved forward with this location that we're located within the ring.
Okay.
And then as for the necessary height and interference issues, I'd like to pass that on to Mr. Jawani.
Sure. So there are multiple reasons why we go for a certain height, and in terms of first, let me address the interference. Like you mentioned earlier, we make sure that we follow all the guidelines by FCC and make sure that we follow them and not go beyond them or try to, you know, go around them. So our main goal is to make sure that, you know, the people around there are satisfied, as well as, you know, as long as we're under the FCC guidelines. As far as the reason why we have it there is because, as shown in the plots or in the coverage maps that you see, and I'm sure you guys can share it with them as well. The reason why we use it is because it's in the place where we found that there were coverage holes. Coverage needed to be better for 911 services, to make calls, to use data as, you know, the data needs increase. The idea is to help this neighborhood and surrounding areas where people reside or have businesses to have better access to network so that they can achieve what they're trying to achieve, and that is the reason why we put it there. We do different analysis to see where it fits better. In this case, where we're proposing, based on RF and our propagations, it sounds to be a better and optimal place to provide coverage in that surrounding area. And that was the reason we decided to go with that particular candidate. In terms of height, coverage does affect, and it has a lot to do with how far we would like to cover that. Again, under the FCC guidelines, you know, power and everything, we make sure that everything is covered within the guidelines. And in this particular case, the coverage that we needed was we ran the propagation and we looked at it and realized that 120 feet is an optimal height for this tower to provide what we're looking for trying to achieve.
Okay, what triggered this whole thing is my understanding is existing and documented significant gap in coverage.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Anything else by way of rebuttal?
Just to circle back on the SBA tower that we discussed earlier in your inquiry,
were
existing antennas on the tower. Unfortunately, in the quick search of tools I could reach via data on my phone, I found the tower was built in 2008, but I was unable to determine if there are any tenants currently located on that tower, unfortunately, from what I...
Antenna search didn't come up?
There's a list about a foot long, and I quickly scrolled through that to see if there are any matching addresses of those antenna to the tower address, and none of them had the matching tower address. There were several antenna that indicated that they're on vacant lots, but the distance from the tower address indicated that that was not an exact match. So, again, just from a cursory look, it was not readily apparent of what antennas would be on that tower. That's not to say that
they weren't.
And unfortunately, Google Maps does not have 3D imaging of that area, because I tried to take a visual look to see if we could tell.
See the tower.
Right. Since it's been there for about a decade. So.
May I just add, I know that there has to be at least one.
I was just going to,
because our code does require that we don't allow a spec antenna to go up with at least one carrier.
That's how I've always viewed
Thank you.
It's
yes.
really so, not yes. a wireless yes. facility unless it's got wireless on
Yeah, they have to commit. I mean, we've had some that we've not looked favorably upon because they didn't have a tenant committed to it.
And I say of that's exactly right. The final addition is there have been times there's things called phantom towers where a tower owner could have a lease agreement with a carrier
that.
And then the carrier fails to actually put equipment on the tower, so they're paying for space, tower space that they never actually. So it is plausible that somebody could come in with an application with a signed lease from a carrier to agree to put there, and then end up not putting the equipment there. Again, this has been there since 2008, though. So,
but this tower is out of your search ring, so it won't fill your gap.
Correct.
Okay.
It's out of the side of the search ring and the coverage area as well.
Correct.
Okay. Anything else?
Not at this time, and I think we'll take your direction then for...
Okay. On the assumption that the Underwoods go with Ms. Kircher tonight and get a copy of the new material, Exhibit 25, my proposal is that I leave the record open a week until the close of business next Thursday for the submission of any comments, any testimony, written testimony, in response to Exhibit 25, and then if there is any, to give you a week after that, and staff also a week after that, to respond. Also, I would say during this first week, was staff going to provide any kind of review or response to Exhibit 25?
I can not knowing what was going to happen tonight, we can take a look at that and provide a response if you'd like.
Why don't you do that? My quick review of Exhibit 25 is that it addresses the deficiencies that you noted in the staff report in finding 3, I believe it is, and it provides the information that the applicant had originally promised in Exhibit 11, I think it is. Yeah, Exhibit 11. It's a little bigger and has more information than I was expecting, but it certainly seems to check the boxes that I was anticipating based on the staff report and based on your Exhibit 11.
Okay. So just to clarify, 1 week for the Underwoods and myself
public
to respond?
General, yeah.
Yeah, public general to respond, and then 1 week for the applicant afterwards?
Right.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you in the audience? 1 week, so I would go with Ms. Kirshner this evening, get copies. One thing that's useful, they're in color. That's important to get the color copies. Review those, and you have a week. So close the business next. Close the business is 4:30 these days.
Well, it gets a little, we accept things until 5 o'clock, but our permit center closes at 3. So if you're going to submit something between 3 and 5, give me a call, and I'll give you my card this evening to
do that. I'll tell you the best way to submit testimony, email by the magic deadline, 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
next.
But if you need to bring it in, we will accept till 5 o'clock because that's the official close of county business. But you need to make arrangements if you're going to do that.
Oh, and then if there is no public testimony, or even if there is and you are not interested in rebutting it, you can waive that final rebuttal period, and in which case the record would close after 5 o'clock next Thursday. So keep that in mind, but you have the option. Staff also has the option to take an additional week to respond to any public comment, evidence, testimony that comes in by 5 o'clock next Thursday. Does that schedule make sense to everybody? Does that seem fair?
Just to clarify, we're talking Thursday, August 16th, and then the following Thursday is the 23rd.
Yes.
Just to get dates down correctly.
Today is August 9th, so any member of the public and staff responds to Exhibit 25 by close of business August 16th. After that, the applicant has to write a final rebuttal until close of business August 23rd.
Okay.
But the applicant can also waive that. And if there's something unexpected that I'm not anticipating, someone should let me know and I can adjust the schedule. But if that, I need to have that kind of information brought to, and request brought to my attention before things get too closed. Yeah.
I was just going to reiterate, and you just did, that these responses are specifically to the Exhibit 25 and the
Correct.
Exhibit 25 only.
Correct. The application has been in the record since June-ish, January, February 27th is when the application first came in. So, correct. Exhibit 25 is our focus for this open record period. Okay? Okay, with that, I will conclude tonight's hearing on that item, keep the record open according to the schedule I just recited, and the record should close by the 23rd, if not sooner. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next is subdivision. PLD 2018-18, Northeast 102nd Avenue subdivision. It is a 16 lots on 3.4 acres. Zoning is R1-75, and whenever we have a change of guard here, I'll take a staff report, please. Are these lights supposed to be doing this? Can you like jazz them up or dim them down or? Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay. That's much better. Much better.
Good evening, Mr. Examiner. My name is Amy Wooten. I'm the land use planner assigned to the proposed project. Next to me is David Bottomini, representing Development Engineering. We are here tonight to discuss the proposal for Northeast 102nd Avenue subdivision. The subject development proposes to divide three existing parcels, totaling approximately 3.43 acres, into 16 new lots in accordance with R175 district standards. The subject site can be accessed from Northeast 102nd Avenue, a public roadway located north of Northeast 63rd Street, and the parcels are depicted on the vicinity map with a black dot. On the zoning map, the subject site is depicted in red. As you can see, the subject site and all surrounding properties are zoned R175. Subject site in this aerial photo is outlined in red. It is comprised of three separate lots. Parcel 106775 is currently improved with a single-family home. The remaining two lots are vacant. The existing residence is proposed to be removed. Staff has several pictures of the subject site. This photo shows Northeast 102nd Avenue looking northbound. The photo is taken at the approximate location of proposed 64th Place, which will provide access to the development. This photo shows 102nd Avenue looking southbound. The photo, again, is taken at the approximate location of Northeast 64th Place. It's just a photo showing what the general site conditions are. This final photo shows a view of 104th Place from the temporary cul-de-sac that's north of the development. The proposed 104th Place will tie in from the south. The site is zoned R175, which requires that each lot have an absolute minimum lot area of 7,500 square feet and a maximum average lot area of 10,500 square feet. This development proposes an average lot size of 7,526 square feet, a minimum lot width of 50 feet, and a minimum lot depth of 90 feet are also required. Each building permit will be limited to a maximum building height of 35 feet for all structures, with front and street side yard setbacks prescribed at 10 feet and all interior side yard setbacks at 5 feet. Accepting lots 1, 10, and 11, the development as proposed meets these standards. Lot 1 doesn't meet the standards as it proposes a lot area of 7,366 square feet, which is below the minimum requirement of 7,500 square feet. However, Section 4200.040(c)(2) of the Clark County Unified Development Code provides that one lot within a proposed subdivision, short plat, or exempt division shall be considered in compliance with minimum lot area requirements if it's within 10% of the required lot area for the zone. At 7,366 square feet, Lot 1 proposes a 2% deviation from the minimum standards and therefore meets this exception. Lots 10 and 11 propose substandard lot depths at 84.75 feet and 86.17 feet, respectively. In response to finding 2, as it was issued in the staff report and recommendation, and corresponding condition A1A, the applicant applied for a type 1 variance approval to lot depth standards for these lots. Staff responded to the request by submitting a memorandum to the record and a new finding for your approval. Staff concluded by applying variance criteria contained in section 4550.020 that the application met criteria for type 1 administrative variance. On August 8th, development engineering staff submitted to the record some minor revisions to finding 11 as contained in the staff report and recommendation.
So that's Exhibit 24, the road transportation revision. So the revision that you talked about to the regarding the variance, that's incorporated in the staff report already?
So I'm not sure what exhibit it is. I can grab my list, but I sent you a memorandum with finding, I believe it was 34, which is the new finding.
What exhibit is that? Because I haven't.
Was it 23?
Exhibit 24 is the one I got today regarding revisions to transportation findings.
That's transportation findings, and then before that.
I saw exhibit 23.
You didn't get 23?
Let me check.
Oh, 22.
Just got the Exhibit 24 yesterday, and I didn't get 22.
Interesting.
And the exhibit list I have.
Yeah, so Exhibit 23 is a copy of an email from our administrative staff showing that they had sent the new finding to parties of record. So some reason you didn't receive it. Do you want my copy?
Yeah, that would be good. So it's a revision to finding 20. Okay, thank you. Finding 34. Okay.
So I presume then that you also don't have exhibit 23?
Correct. My exhibit list ends at 16.
So I think, do you have an updated list, Christy?
I'll take you up on your offer then.
So on Monday, I can make a note to send you the exhibits.
Yeah, that would be very helpful. Or just post
17
it to
forward.
The FTP site. Okay, great. Thank you.
You need them from which one forward?
I have 16, so 17 through 24. And I now have 22 and 24.
Okay.
So. Okay.
All right. So the application was submitted on April 16th of 2018. Staff report and recommendation was issued July 25th of 2018. At that time, the CP determination of non-significance became final. There was no appeal filed. Based on the staff report and recommendation issued July 25th of this year, staff finds that all land use development criteria can be met with this proposal. Hereby recommends the examiner approve this application as conditioned. Thank you, Mr. Examiner. Staff is available if you have questions.
Let's see. I did have a question. I noticed. If you turn in the staff report in the middle, dealing with SEPA, it says that SEPA notice went out July 17th, and something on August 1st, I assume close of, but SEPA didn't go out on 17th, it went on June 27th, right? And the comment period is open until July 11th. Best I can figure based on the record.
So the public notice went out on June 27th?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking about?
Yeah.
So for subdivisions, we've had several subdivisions of late that have required a lot of rescheduling. So instead of sending the notice out 14 days after, we've started sending the notice out after early issues and making sure that there weren't going to be issues that required the hearing to be postponed again. So we just sent it out later, but we still got it in the required 15 days that it was supposed to be in before the hearing.
So what was the date of SEPA notice? July 17th or June 27th?
Did I write the wrong date down?
I'm not sure. The record seems to indicate it was June 27, but in the SEPA discussion section of the staff report, it says July 17.
June 27th.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay. I'll go with that. And the preliminary plat, Exhibit 14, I didn't compare in detail that exhibit with the preliminary plat in the application package. Was there a change?
So the plat was updated on July 27th. In response to finding two, they removed the private driveway between lot 10 and 11.
Oh, so I don't even have a copy of the revised.
The current subdivision plat.
The most current plat I have is Exhibit 14. It says no date on it. That's what I've been going from. So I really do need to know what is before me. It needs to be an exhibit. Okay, so that's okay. That's the revised. Like, great. And the only difference between that and Exhibit 14 is the elimination of this little private driveway drop-in between lots 10 and 11.
Yeah, they decided not to access the lots from private driveway, so that the orientation of the homes could all be similar along 64th.
Okay. Okay, I think I've got it then. Mr. Bottomini, I don't want to make you seem underused, but I haven't seen any killer engineering issues.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Examiner. David Bottomini, Clark County Development Engineering. Yeah, I have nothing to add unless you have any questions for me or if I could clarify anything for you.
No, I think this... This revision, I don't know if this even came, yeah, this came from you, the Exhibit 24 change to finding 11 seems
yes.
Pretty vanilla.
Yeah, and more along the lines of clarification there with respect to the drawing a distinction between the partial width improvement for most of 64th Place versus the full width improvement. Which has to do more with 104th Place. And let's see. And then with respect to the intersection, there was the allowance for turning movement analysis to be done, especially with respect to the northeast quadrant of that intersection.
This is the intersection of the 64th Place and 102nd?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense then. No stormwater issues?
Not that I know of. Nothing of real significance.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That, I don't have any further questions at this point. Stay tuned. I will take with, at this point, the applicant's presentation, please.
Good afternoon. Travis Johnson, PLS Engineering, 2008 C Street, Vancouver, Washington.
Dan Weisner, the applicant. Mailing address is 10013 Northeast Hazeldale Avenue, Post Office Box 504, Vancouver, Washington 98685.
Okay. Go ahead.
First, I'd just like to thank Mrs. Wooten, Mr. Bottomini, for all their hard work. And just one minor change to the last minute addendum.
Okay.
I think just maybe a little bit of clarification in regards to 64th Place.
So when you say that, when you mean the last minute addendum?
It would be Exhibit 24.
Okay. See, 24 is the memo from Mr. Bottomini.
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's, I think that the applicant should propose sufficient, it's the right here, 46 feet of right-of-way, 28 feet of sidewalks. Much of the proposed 64th is proposed as partial width roadway. Additionally, it should be clarified in the condition A3D that state improvements are full width improvements. I think maybe that we can just add that it's partial right-of-way for a portion of 64th, but the pavement roadway width meets the local standard.
So I'm not tracking. So
That is correct. However, you're also not proposing a sidewalk on the north side of the roadway.
Correct.
Okay, I see. So much. So it's partial in the sense it doesn't have sidewalk for much of its length on the north side.
Correct, and that is with the assumption that ultimately it would be widened in the future with future development on the parcel to the north.
Like when the church redevelops?
Or at least utilizes that open area to the south of the church itself.
Okay, so if they come in with a development proposal, they would be required to upgrade to current standards. Okay.
Yes.
So how do you suggest we modify this proposed finding and condition? I guess your problem, let me see if I understand. So condition A3D is what supposedly implements this finding. Let me just see exactly what it says. A3D says, just says the required improvements associated with the internal roads shall include 46 feet of right-of-way, 28 feet of paved width, sidewalks, curbs, and gutters. But in reality, that's not going to be the case for all of 64th Place because it won't have those sidewalk on the north side.
Correct, planter and sidewalk.
Okay, planter and sidewalk. Okay, so you would recommend a change to condition A3D to make clear that part of 64th Place
has a reduced right-of-way and excludes planter and sidewalk on the north side.
Okay.
Or it abuts them. Up to the point, and we could further clarify that is between the intersection of 102nd Avenue to the west property line of Lot 1.
Got it. Does that seem okay?
Yeah.
That now makes sense to me. Okay. And that's the only quibble?
Yes.
With the conditions and findings. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will take testimony from anyone else in favor of this proposal. Anyone with neutral testimony or questions about it? Okay, come on down.
I'm Donna Oakes. I live at 10312 Northeast 63rd. I actually have the land where it arches, you know, where it kind of cuts off.
Let me see. I'm trying to see.
I back up between 11 and that. My house is just right behind 11.
Let's see.
Yes.
So you're just south of it. Okay.
Correct. So I've lived there for... And a lot of our neighbors, we have lived there for many, many years, over 30 years for a lot of us.
Wow.
And
okay.
Am I correct that shared driveway is not going to exist?
That, let me just check. Exhibit 21 is the current proposal. I saw it here for the first time. Let's take a look.
Correct. That goes right between my access to my house and my neighbors. The brown, where it says shared driveway one.
Yep, it's not on the plan.
Okay.
So you have only one way out now. It's your driveway.
Wonderful. I was wondering, right now we have old posts and barbed wire fence, which has been there for many years. Will there be a fence built to line this new development?
It's not part of this subdivision proposal. It's not one of the county's requirements. But I'll tell you, as a practical matter, most when a builder comes in to build a house here, they usually put up a fence, or the homeowner will put up a fence. And one way to ensure that is for you to put a bunch of barking dogs in your backyard.
No.
Trash piles, old tires, you'll get a fence right away. So.
Okay.
Usually, but it's not part of what we're talking about tonight, is just the creation of these lots.
Correct.
What gets put on them is not really part of our deal.
So in other words, the fence winds up on us.
If you want to build your own fence, is that what you mean?
Most of us along that area, we all want a fence, because actually you're creating a whole neighborhood in there, and yep. You're going to have a street through there.
Yep.
So, you know, I think we've been there long enough that we would prefer to have a fence put up to wall that property. Because that whole fence line is those little is chunks of wood with, and a lot of people, they do have dogs. So if they come down, if they come in and they tear out all that fence.
Well, I don't know if they're going to tear out the fence. Whose property is it on?
It is theirs. It is the own.
They might.
You know,
it might go.
So there would be an issue if they just came in one day. Most of us work. And that fence is down. And, you know, that's my one concern. I don't mind if they build back there. I just would like a fence put up to block, you know, that development.
I hear you saying two things. One is the elimination of the existing fence, and then secondly, the reestablishment of a new and better fence. Those are two different things. For sure, I would bet this old fence will go away, but I would grab these two gentlemen before they leave this evening, just so that they have your phone number, your email address, and they can communicate with you as things move forward, and they can tell you even tonight what they're planning to do.
Okay.
Usually developers don't commit to build a fence, but they are more than willing to talk with you about it. A fence, I'm just guessing here, but for sure a fence is going to be up there somewhere. Usually if it's on the common property line, you can talk about sharing the cost of it or whatever, but good fences make good neighbors. Everyone knows that. And they're going to try and market these lots to normal people who are going to want, you know, kind of the fence there. So it'll happen. When or how is not clear. Again, it's not part of the subdivision process, but grab these two gentlemen on the way out tonight.
Okay. And that's everything.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else with neutral testimony or questions? Anyone opposed? Anyone at all? Okay. Mr. Johnson, Mr. Weisner, you want to add anything by way of rebuttal? Any promises about fences? Stuff like that.
Thank you, Mr. Examiner. We plan to remove the shared driveway.
It's gone already.
Yes. For that.
Okay.
And that we do plan to build this subdivision out. And
so you'll be the builder. Okay.
We're the builder developer. Yes.
That's even more important, Ms. Oakes.
So and yes, good. Good fences make good neighbors, and we try to be good neighbors even when we're doing the development and the building. So,
yeah, nobody likes to sell lots to new homeowners when a war has already started. So, no, but, I mean, developers are very interested in keeping peace with the neighbors because they have to sell these lots to people. So, The question was what kind of homes will be. Could be anything. I can't dictate it. The county code doesn't.
That's building the height. So the question is what kind of plans do we have in here? Yeah. You see along the south side, these lots are a little bit wider, a little bit not quite as deep as the ones on the north. Mm-hmm. So the ones upon our plan would be to put as many single levels in there as possible, as the market has dictated that a single level is a preferred housing orientation for the majority of people that can afford these larger lots and larger houses.
Okay. From living in Portland, these are larger lots for sure. Most often I get before me just the developer, the entity that is dividing the land, putting in the streets, and then they will sell it to actual home builders. Here you have before us tonight the builder. And so the answers to your questions this gentleman has, so I would definitely get his information, get in touch, stay in touch with him. When do you think you'll be building, actually?
We hope to break ground on site in the middle of March this next year because the soils are so good. They're got high infiltration, and then we would probably start construction of homes probably like August or September of next year, about a year from now.
Hear that? So that when he says break ground, first thing they have to do is grade the site, put in the streets, those sorts of things, and then home construction about a year from now, generally. The clearing happens a lot way before that. Partly the clearing happens so they can get in and do all the surveys that are needed to put together this application. But the heavy equipment, dirt moving stuff won't likely happen till next spring. But these are the answer men. Anything else? Okay. Staff, anything, any parting advice based on what you heard tonight?
No, not from me.
I would like to make one clarification, which is to say that the engineering addendum that was submitted into the record, I believe it was yesterday, the applicant did have the opportunity to review it. In fact, it went to the applicant last week. The applicant remained silent and ultimately said that they did not have any comments regarding it. So for the record, I wanted to provide that clarification that the applicant did have a number of days to review it.
Let me just do a quick check here. So the current plan that's before me is Exhibit 21. It does still show no sidewalk or planter on the north side there. So that's the proposal. It is kind of a significant issue, but it's very important that we map it out and get it corrected at the hearing. So
yes,
better late than
absolutely.
Never. So
yep. Thank you.
Okay, with that, I will close the record on this item, take it under consideration, and issue a written decision on it within approximately 2 weeks of tonight. I thank all of you for coming and testifying. That also concludes tonight's hearing.